From the New York City area, welcome to the Badass Counseling Show, where the master badass himself, Sven Erlandsson, takes you deep and gives balm for the soul, baby.
Yes, we are live with the Badass Counseling Show, doing a lightning round episode wherever you are tuning in from today. Are you out on the boat doing a little bass fishing today? Are you going long haul on a long road trip, perhaps for through the American West? Or maybe my Canadian friends are up north there doing some shoveling. I don't know. You know, you can get snow up north. You can get it any time of year, it seems like. Wherever you are tuning in from, it's great to have you here at the Badass Counseling Show. I am joined in studio by KC over in the booth. That is a K and that is a C. It's not KC. It is a KC. And I am also joined by Rob the Rocket right next to me. Rob, speak.
Good day. The sun is up. The sky is blue.
Oh, yes.
All's right with the world.
All's right with the world. I agree. And so much wrong, but we keep doing our best to right the wrongs in this world. And so here we go. Let's get to work. What are your questions for me on all things life, relationships, self, career, and so forth? The opening question, wow, punching me in the face today, Brand Lag, over on TikTok asked this question. Why do cops kill themselves at twice the rate of the regular population? Well, first thing I'm going to say is I'm going to just run with that statistic, even if I have no idea if that statistic is true. However, what I do know, having had a counseling practice for 30 years and worked with people in high-stress professions, such as the oil and gas industry, such as military / special forces, such as first responders, such as police in particular, I have worked with many, literally thousands over the years. I have gotten the calls in the middle of the night from the police officer with his service pistol in his hand and perhaps a Jack Daniel in the other hand and ready to end it. And you ask the question, why do cops in particular, or I'm going to expand it to anyone in a high-stress profession, kill themselves at twice the rate of regular population? Why? Because it is high stress, high demand, facing life and death every day. But it's not just that. Any profession where you are, it can be any job where you are working a lot, where you are overtaxing yourself, overburdening yourself, not just any profession, but any life, where you are stressing yourself out, where you are at or near burnout constantly, is going to heighten your anxiety. It's going to heighten all your feelings inside of you, or it's going to deaden all your feelings inside of you. It's going to cause you to become swollen with emotions or choked off from emotions. It's going to cause you to have impaired decision-making. It's also going to cause you to very often to eat away at yourself, to start thinking less of yourself, less about life. You're going to become more susceptible to the vicissitudes, the pains, the impacts of others' words and the pains of life. So you mix together a high stress that it can be of any profession, overworking, on top of, let's say, having family, on top of your own shit that you've already had in your inside yourself, your own feelings, your own pains, on top of a profession where you are seeing life and death every day and where you have to be constantly vigilant. Think about that. Police officer, you are literally never safe until you're back in the police house. And there have been some, you know, fires and bombings at police houses. So some could argue you're not even safe there. Perhaps you even wonder if you're safe in your own home. You're in a profession where you're literally never safe or almost never safe. So what does that do? It heightens everything, all of your emotions, all of your fear. And so you live in that heightened state on top of all the other pressures in your life, on top of whatever BS messages you were taught about yourself growing up. And that's going to cause a higher likelihood of killing yourself, of making bad decisions, of hurting yourself. All right? That would be why. And that can be true in really any profession. The fact that you're facing life and death every day in military and in police and in, let's say, the oil and gas industry, I have clients in that industry, that adds to it. But any profession that's high stress, from long-haul truckers, high-stress job, believe it or not, especially when you factor in weather and so on and so forth, people in, you know, farming where you are dependent upon, you know, the weather and so on and so forth, there can be anything. But yes, when you're facing life and death every day and when you live in fear every day, that is going to drive you more and more to the brink. Next question. Best advice for new healthy friendships. The single biggest thing you can do to improve any and all of your relationships in life, be it friendships, love relationships, relationships with family, relationships at work. Single biggest thing you can do to improve those and attract better relationships is to do the work inside of you of examining and pulling out all of the pain, the fears, and the BS beliefs you've been taught about yourself. Okay? Let me give you an example. My second wife and I divorced in 2004. I did not meet my present girlfriend until 2014. That means I had 10 years of my life where I was largely alone. I fell in love once or twice in there, but there was no long-term anything. I just tend to fall in love a little easy. I'm that way. Anyway, but the point is I went 10 years of being alone. And at that point in my life, I had already been alone off and on. And it didn't affect me the way it affects some people, all right? And I'd done a lot of the work. But during those 10 years, I continued to do all the work that, you know, that I talked to you guys about, all the journaling. And I've always been an avid self-help person and reading self-help books and so on and so forth. So I continued to work on myself. And as a result, the relationship that I'm in now with my present girlfriend of the last 10 years is the best relationship I've ever had in my life. Well, that's just one reflection. That's just my friendships now are different from friendships I've had previously. And I continue to attract new friends, all right? Why? Because I'm constantly doing the work of cleaning out that darn love cup because there's always new stuff being dropped in there, all right? And so there has to be a willingness to not have friends, a willingness to let go of needing friends. And there's nothing wrong with wanting it. But if we're engaged in a sort of desperation, I need to have friends, that's because something's going on inside of me that is creating anxiety and fear if I don't have friends. So the more I can focus on those fears and flush out the anxiety and flush out, also, does that make me feel unloved if I don't have friends? Well, then we're at that tracks back to some conditioning you got in childhood that I have less value if I don't have friends or if I don't have someone confirming my worth. So that's some more work I can be doing on myself, but the more work you're doing on yourself and flushing out all that stuff, and the cleaner your love cup becomes, the more you will effortlessly attract new friendships, and they'll be higher quality. But it also requires this, and this is a tricky one. I was just talking to a client this week who is living overseas, and we were talking about exactly this. And one of the things that he has come to realize is, Sven, I have to cut out of my life some of these friendships I've been holding on to because I realize I just keep putting up with shit and they're not really there for me. And I haven't wanted to let go of them because I don't have anyone else. I don't have family and these friendships, but I realize they just suck because I'm seeing more and more clearly how they are not meeting my needs and they're not there for me. Even since I got this, you know, diagnosis from the doctor, and these friends aren't really there for me. And so part of attracting new friendships is letting go of the ones that aren't fulfilling and breathing life into you. All right, next question. My girlfriend travels for work. How can I be more supportive and not needy? That's a great question. And you can try to create a new behavior. In other words, you're saying, how can I be more supportive? What can I do for her? What's an action I can take for her? And what I would offer to you is the answer is not in what you can do for her. The answer is what's going on inside of you. Because you didn't just say, what can I do to be more supportive of her? You also said, and be not needy. That you're basically telling me I am needy. How do I be not needy? So in other words, the problem is inside of you. So what do I do to fix that? Because once you get rid of the neediness, you'll just naturally be more supportive. You won't be as like, oh, call me. I need to know that you still love me. Are you cheating on me? Or whatever it might be. And I'm not mocking you, Tyler. I'm really not. I've been where you are. I know what it's like. My second wife was on the road. She ended up starring in the first national tour of a Broadway show. Beautiful woman, incredibly personality, just fantastic woman. So I know what it's like to be nervous. And imagine compound that with, you know, everybody staring at your girlfriend every night. You know, it's mess with your head a bit. But what it is, so the issue is inside of you. What is it that, if you and I were in a session right now, Tyler, I'd be asking you, what is it that's going on inside of you that caused you to feel needy? What is the fear driving the behavior? Remember, people, if you ever want to do a deep drill quickly on your own issues, always ask yourself the question, what's the fear driving my behavior? What's the real fear going on inside of me right now? Or what is the real pain? Or what's the scariest part? And put it at extremes. Don't list five things. Do like I do. You've heard me on these counseling episodes where I say to a person, what's the biggest one? Or distill it down to one sentence. By forcing yourself into tighter parameters, it forces yourself to be more clear in your answers. So in your case, Tyler, I would say, what is the single biggest fear that is causing you to be so needy when your girlfriend travels? Now, and in addition, the mere fact that you, and by the way, so you list that fear. Okay, the fear is that she might be cheating on me, or she doesn't love me. Or if I don't have her telling me that she loves me 12 times a day, I feel unloved. Okay, so you, what you're exposing right there then is are the flaws inside of yourself, so to speak, flaws. The preconditioning inside of yourself that says, unless I have this person constantly telling me they love me or confirming it, I feel unloved. Well, that's something from your own past where you were taught that you were unlovable. And so you're constantly needing more love poured into your freaking love cup here, right? Okay. The other side of it, though, is you wouldn't say, how can I be more supportive and not needy? Unless, in all likelihood, Tyler, your girlfriend has said to you, dude, you're fucking needy. I mean, is it ever about me? Or can you just let go and encourage me to go? I'm betting you've gotten a message from her that you can be a little, well, to use your word, needy, pain in the ass, whatever it is, and it's hard for her to do her traveling. And it's not just that, gee, that's unbecoming, you know, women don't like weak men or anything like that. It's worse. It's just hard. It's just, it's taking up emotional bandwidth inside your girlfriend. Your own personal shit is taking up her emotional bandwidth so that she's not able to do her work or just feel good about traveling. You want her to do great in her work. So then it behooves you to look at what is it that's going on inside of me so that I'm not such an emotional fucking drain on my girlfriend. And it's not just you, Tyler. I've been there. It can be boyfriend. It can be anything, all right? I'm not dogging you personally. But you need to go inside of yourself and to find out what those fears are. And you might also ask yourself, in general, in this relationship, are your needs being met? Because it is possible. It's not just on your end of the equation. But also ask yourself, why am I so needy? Is it a previous relationship that has preconditioned me into this relationship where I felt unloved in my last one, so I need more and more in this one? Or does it go back even further into childhood and so forth? Rob?
I'll tell you how I handled this. I had a similar experience and similar feelings. My wife a few years ago had a very high stress, literally around the world business trip. And she didn't want to have to think about having to phone different time zones every day. I got that. Still, I had some concerns. So what I did was I recorded a message for her for every day of her trip, a little file for every day to be opened. And I knew her itinerary. I said, okay, so now you're in Bangkok or whatever. And so she would open that every day, and sometimes she'd have a chance to respond, and sometimes she didn't. But I felt fine. I didn't have to reach her. She didn't have to reach back. But anything that happened worked out.
Wow.
How about that?
How about that? Wow.
I'm not saying that's for everybody. But no. That worked for me.
And what did it do for you, Rob, to leave all those messages for your wife and so forth? What did it do for you?
I totally relaxed.
Why were you able to relax since you left a message for her? What need was that meeting inside of you?
Well, I knew I wanted to be in contact with her, preferably every day. Mm-hmm. This is definitely was a high-stress trip for her. I knew she could use the support, but I also knew that she couldn't be bothered all the time. Mm-hmm. That would make things much harder for her. So I was able to be there with her without having to lift a finger, essentially. And so when there was any contact, it really felt great.
I like that.
And when there wasn't, it didn't feel bad.
How about that? You guys, and this is a great example of just being creative in your relationships and getting your own needs met while also meeting the needs of your partner. And maybe the needs of your partner is, dude, when I'm traveling, I just don't want to have contact. It's not that I don't love you. I just want to stay focused on work. And everyone's different. And it's trusting that this person still loves me, even if they're not doing what I want them to do or whatever it is. But if we're feeling unloved or we're feeling the need or, acting in a needy way or not able to be supportive for them, I need to look at what's going on inside of me. All right, here we go. Who cares?
Wait, well, oh, that's the
name. That's their name.
Okay. I thought they were responding to me.
I know. Who cares? Shut up, old man. No, who cares on TikTok is saying, can you talk about the silent treatment and what it does to kids? Now, you put a little twist on it there at the end. I thought you were going to ask me about silent treatment in relationships. And silent treatment in love relationships in particular is extraordinarily powerful. I have found in my own personal relationships that, especially with women, and that's why I'm very careful to not use it. But you're saying what the silent treatment does to kids. Think about what the silent treatment does, let's just say, with your boss. Universal experience, all right? Or your biggest customer if you own your own business. If all of a sudden they're silent, They're silent for a day. They're silent for a week. They're silent for several weeks. What happens? The mind starts to spin, right? If you've been having regular contact with someone and then they go silent, or maybe someone's natural default mode with you, whether, again, a lover, a friend, a boss, a customer, and all of a sudden, maybe their default mode is they're always silent. They rarely communicate. What happens? Our brain starts to spin. What happens when our brains start to spin? Oh, our brains concoct all sorts of motherfucking theories, right? Rob, let me ask you, in the example that you just gave of leaving those messages for your wife, had you not left those messages for your wife, had you not felt like you're reaching out and she's on the other side of the world, traveling around the world, all sides of the world, what would have happened in your brain?
It would have started to spin uncontrollably.
That's it. And that's not because Rob's some fucking neurotic guy. He's like one of the calmest dudes I've ever met. But the truth is, it's because it's a universal human experience, the spinning of the mind. And we all know what can happen when our minds spin. It creates all sorts of fears. It creates all sorts of stories. And this is why you guys hear me all the fucking time talk about the clothes dryer. What happens when you put clothes in the dryer and you leave it on and it won't turn off? Those clothes shrink and shrink and shrink and shrink because they're just tumbling, tumbling, tumbling. But what happens when shit tumbles in our head? Just the opposite. It gets bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. We create all sorts of stories which conjure up all sorts of, wait for it, fears. Fears. So the original question from Who Cares on TikTok is, can you talk about the silent treatment and what it does to kids? So imagine we're all fucking adults here in this room right now having this adult fucking conversation about silent treatment from a boss, from a customer, from a lover, from a friend, from Rob's wife, whatever it is. We're all talking about silent treatment on adults and how hard it is for adults. Just imagine the pain for a child to not have their worth confirmed, or that mom's really fucking angry. And when she goes silent, what happens in the child's brain? I must be bad. I'm so bad. Oh God, why did I do that? I shouldn't have said that. Or what did I do this time? What did I do? I know I did something. It's all my fault. God, I feel horrible. Yep. Silent treatment on children is just fucking torture. Just torture. You want to destroy a child's sense of self-worth? Let their brain start to fucking spin about how fucking awful they are. Don't confirm their worth. Don't use your words. Don't use the words, I love you. There are actually parents still today, to this day, who don't tell their children, I love you. Literally, there are. And I've even heard parents defend it. They'll say something like, well, I don't want them to hear it, you know, and get used to it, and then it loses its meaning. Really? Really? I love you losing its meaning to a child? You believe you are capable of losing your feelings of love for your child? What the fuck kind of parent are you if you actually lost your feelings of love for your fucking child? Now, granted, they can be pissy as a teenager, but it doesn't mean you stop loving them, right? You may not love the action, but you love the person. Withholding love. Okay, so if the child isn't getting messages of love, isn't getting attention, affection, approval, and just getting silence, that child's brain will spin all manner of shit. I'm no good. I'm unlovable. I'm the biggest screw up. I always make mom not love me. I always make dad go silent. I know it's my fault. That's right. The child will start to blame themselves. And now we're seeing the beginning of a belief system being created inside of the child. They're not aware they're creating a belief system, but that's exactly what they're doing. And that belief system, that false belief system, that they are bad, that they're unlovable, that they're unwantable, that they're no good, that who they really are doesn't matter, or that I only exist, my purpose is just to meet mom and dad's needs. I don't have worth in and of myself, or my worth is from my doing. All this belief system begins to take root, and it becomes, as you've heard me say, the virus infecting the operating system for the rest of their lives. Rob?
My son did me an enormous favor. He must have been, I don't know, maybe 3 or 4. And one day he just said to me, Dad, you don't tell me you love me enough. And that was like a lightning bolt. And now whenever I talk to my kids, I never fail to tell them I love them.
Beautiful. How old was he?
I would guess maybe 3 or 4.
Wow.
Yeah. He did me, what a favor he did to me.
That's genius.
Yeah.
Wow. And I mean, classic from the mouths of babes, right?
Oh, yeah.
Where the hell did that kid get that at 3 or 4?
I don't know. Can't be me.
No, it obviously was you, or
oh,
and or the mom, dad, but or the mom, excuse me. But
wherever he got it, I am appreciative.
Yeah, wow, that's amazing. Okay, moving forward, we've got Susan, and Susan asks the question: in a relationship, they fall fast. Oh, they fall for you. Okay, fall as in fall in love. My bad. Okay, so in a relationship, they fall in love with me fast, but I hold back. When I fall in love, then they're done. Why? Well, I mean, there's the obvious, you know, hard to get thing that I want something and want something and want something until I get it, then I don't want it. But that's sort of a banal theoretical thing. But what's more interesting in this question is, why do you hold back, Susanna? Why do you hold back? If they fall in love with you fast, why are you holding back before, you know, if you actually feel something? What you're saying by saying I hold back, what you're saying is I'm feeling something, but I don't express it. All right? So you're being inauthentic, right? You are deliberately saying, no, I do feel it, but I don't want to express it. Because if you didn't feel it, then you wouldn't be holding back. All right? So you're holding back. And then the real question becomes, what's the fear driving the behavior causing you to hold back? What is the fear driving you to be inauthentic? Okay, do you see where I'm going here, Susanna? Because you're saying, I hold back. Well, if I hold back, if I'm holding back a horse that wants to go running across the field, and or my dog, I'm holding it back. It wants to attack that other dog. I'm holding it back. In other words, it wants to go forward. If you're holding yourself back, what you're saying is your natural instinct, who you really are, wants to go forward, but I'm holding it back. So in other words, then, by holding yourself back, you are being inauthentic. You are not being you. And that's being driven by a fear. And then the question becomes, well, what is it I'm really afraid of? Well, I'm betting it's that if I open up my heart and express what I really feel, then I'm going to get hurt, right? Some derivative of that, I'm betting that's it. Right. And so I would rather be a fake version of myself, right? Until I know they love me and they want me, then I'll reveal my real self. But then you've just changed. See? Then you're supposedly your authentic self when before. So they were falling in love with what seems to be your inauthentic self. And then you reveal your authentic self and they're not interested, which of course is painful, right? That's probably the whole reason you'll hold back in the first place, for fear that if I show you who I really am and what I really feel, you may not like me and you may leave me. And it was confirmed by their actions. Here's the real challenge. Just be who the fuck you are. You're going to win some, you're going to lose some. I was saying earlier, I was single for 10 years, right? And I lost a lot. I had some women that I was very much in love with or very much liked. You know, a few of them were married, sad to say. One in Louisiana, another one in Ohio, and so forth. and it just wasn't time, right? But I kept doing the work on myself so much. And then eventually, you know, after 10 years of being single, which I was fine with. I mean, I still wanted some, but I was fine. I made a life that felt good to me, all right? And so if I got someone, great, and if I didn't, then I'd spend my time being alone and life would go on for me because I want to be happy and I don't equate having to have a relationship with that's the only way I can be happy, okay?
Kind of the flip side of that question over on YouTube.
Yeah?
Why won't someone let you go if they don't want a relationship with you?
Well, and that raises a question. Did you guys hear that? Rob said, why would someone not let you go if they don't want a relationship with you? My question is, what the hell does that even mean? Not let me go. How, if I want to go, how am I not able to go? How are you not able to go?
They're hanging on.
But what in what form, Rob? No, keep talking to me here, Rob. In what form? And I get it. We've all said, oh, they're hanging on. Why won't they let me go? But in the end, draw a boundary and hold your boundaries. Why are you still allowing the conversation to continue with someone who is trying to pull you back into a relationship? What are you doing to facilitate that holding on? Go ahead, Rob. I think you have a follow-up.
It's not that they're not letting you go. It's that you're not going, and you should.
Well, that's just it. If you're feeling like, oh, they won't let me go, more often than not, it's because you haven't shut it down and moved on with your life. You're holding on, precisely as Rob just said. That's exactly right. All right. Oh, here we go. Rob says, much more to come right after this short break.
Now here's one of Sven's clients talking about his experience with badass counseling.
What I wanted to be able to get to across to other people is just how much you're able to deep dive into what's been going on in my life and help me figure out where and what caused that to help me solve and find those problems in my life to change where I'm going forward. None of the other therapists I went to with that, they try and help me figure out some other issues that may or may not be coming up, whereas you're able to dig down, find the core of what's going on. And I haven't been able to find that before. Just want to get more people aware of where you can go to in case you want your own therapy. And getting the hole in my love cup was one of the things that changed my life.
This show provides soul counseling intended to entertain and inform and is not medical advice. Now, back to the badass.
Rob, I got to tell you, one of our followers here on Facebook says, it's Auntie Na says, great answer, Rob.
Well, that's one.
Bull. Rob gets so much love on this show because he's just got so much experience. And plus, he is the machine that makes the engine go forward something.
Yeah, well, without you, I'm nothing, which is the opposite of what I say to my computer. Without me, you're nothing when it's not doing what I want.
Ah, I see. It's about control and dominance.
If it's a machine, yeah.
You're a dominator of machines, man. You are a man among machines, something. All right. What's the best way to deal with being friend-zoned after intimacy? Ouch. Best way to deal with friend-zone after intimacy. The mere fact that you're saying deal with says pain. Anytime anybody uses the phrase deal with, it means pain, okay? And so what you got to do is just grab your pen and paper or grab your computer and start journaling about all your pain. Write a letter to the person who just friend-zoned you. Don't send the letter. Some people say, Sven, why shouldn't I send the letter? I'll tell you, because I used to send those letters. And eventually, after the relationship is finally done and I finally release all my feelings, I felt so embarrassed and like such a fucking dumbass for sending letters. And I realized the goal wasn't, I was trying to convert them to loving me again. But then you eventually realize what a lost cause that was. And I realized I put all my feelings out there. And at times they were even used against me or I just felt stupid. But you realize the real goal is to flush out the feelings, not to convert the other person. You think your real goal is to convert the other person till you realize they're not going to be converted. Nothing's changed. Nothing's going to change. And so the real goal is to flush out all the feelings. So when you've been friend zoned, you have feelings. The friend zone just implies, the very name of it implies, I wanted to be in a different zone. I'm not there. And that hurts my feelings. So you're feeling sad, Kelly, and you need to bring up all those feelings of sadness. And I'm sorry that you got friend zoned. Clearly you wanted something else. And I know this is going to sound like bullshit to you, Kelly, but the bottom line fact is this. And I know this is going to sound like bullshit. Anybody who's in this state of being rejected or not getting the person you think you want, anybody who's in that state, once life moves on and you find a relationship eventually, and it ends up being wonderful, you're going to be like, oh my God, I'm so glad that one ended. I told you earlier, you know, there was a woman in, there were a few women I fell in love with during those 10 years I was single. And one of them was in Ohio. And I thought, man, it'd be, you know, I was just madly in love, right? Madly in love. And now it's just like, you know, I'm sure she's a good woman. We haven't been in touch in fact, more than a decade. But it's just like the life that I've gone on to, the relationship I'm in now and where my career is, you know, I'm in the New York City area and, you know, my business in Manhattan and all this. It's like, I wouldn't have this. And I'm even happier. I'm not saying that she was less of a person or I wouldn't be happy with her. It's just like my happiness increased. But we so hold on to someone or something or some job or some profession or some family member, whatever it is, thinking this is where my happiness is. Even though the ship is sinking, I'm clinging to it because it's all I've ever known and it's the security of that. And so it's a long-winded way of saying, you know, when you've been friend-zoned, you've lost the thing you wanted. But I'm telling you, there's greater life ahead. As long as you continue to do the work of healing yourself and flushing out the pain, the fears, and the bullshit beliefs you've been taught about yourself. All right. Next question is from Pteranodon. Oh, fun little name there. How do you know when to hold on and when to let go of lost love? Well, there are two ways to know. There's probably more than that, but two ways that jump to my little pea brain are this. You call it lost love, and how do you know when to hold on, when to let go? The simplest way, not the easiest way, but the simplest way is just wait till the pain gets bad enough. You guys have read my book, or for those of you that have, you know what you're, you know, when I say change will not occur until the pain gets bad enough. Change will not occur until the pain gets bad enough. So you just keep holding on until your grip gets so fucking exhausted and the pain is so great from the internal pain of the loss and the sadness and the fear of being alone again or never finding love until eventually you let go. Because the fear of letting go is big. But until the pain of holding on gets worse, you're never going to let go. So that's the simplest way, but it's not the easiest way. The easier way, or at least the less painful way, is you already said it's lost love. You said, how do you know when to hold on and when to let go of lost love? So you know the love is gone. So what you can do then now, rather than waiting for the pain to increase, is you can begin to talk with your therapist or talk with your best friend or with your journal or with, you know, letter writing and getting out all the feelings that are causing you to hold on. Because this is one of those cases people always say to me, well, Sven, why would I ever want to flesh out feelings of love? You always talk about fleshing out the negative feelings, and that makes sense to me, the pain, the anger, the sadness, the melancholy, the disdain, all those feelings. But you also talk about fleshing out love. Why would you ever flesh out love? Well, here's a perfect example. Pteranodon is holding on to lost love, and it's causing Pteranodon, this person here on TikTok, causing this person to feel sadness, pain, longing, and furthermore, keeping them with 1 foot in the past and 1 foot in the future, hopefully, or maybe even 2 feet in the past. And so the more we release that love by doing the work of welcoming up those feelings, flushing out those feelings in writing or typing or what, or talking out with your therapist repeatedly or your best friend and continuing to do it until those feelings are gone. This is a perfect example of love keeping us from moving forward and getting on with life, where the love is actually a dysfunction. It's keeping me from functioning forward. And forward progress isn't always the goal. And in fact, in order to make that forward progress, you have to sit in the present of the pain and the loss. All right, next question. How to deal with a husband of 26 years who is following bimbos on TikTok? How do I get him to understand it is disrespectful and demeaning to me? Is the marriage too far gone? Okay, that's a good one. Terry, so your husband of 26 years is following bimbos on TikTok. You want him to understand it is difficult, disrespectful, and demeaning. Is the marriage too far gone? I'm going to assume, Terry, that you have told your husband of 26 years that his actions of following bimbos on TikTok is demeaning and disrespectful. I'm going to assume that you have told him that, right? If you haven't, then you gotta. And just say that. I'll be very honest with you, sweetheart. It hurts my feelings. It feels so disrespectful. It feels like you are fundamentally conveying the underlying message to me that I'm not good enough and that I'm not enough for you. And perhaps, and I'm going to put some words into your mouth, Terry. These may not be your words, but it's common enough. Every time you do that, honey, it makes me feel disrespected and like I'm not good enough. And the simple fact of the matter is my entire life, I've felt not good enough. I've had that message in my head. And by you going and looking at other women or communicating with other women, it hurts me so bad because it just fucking pounds me right in the chest of the very message I've been getting my whole life, that I'm not good enough. And it hurts so bad. To which he might respond, if you said it, might. Oh, come on, it's no big deal. It's just, I'm not communicating with him. I'm just looking at him on TikTok. No, you don't understand, sweetheart. It hurts. I'm telling you, it hurts. Oh, get over it, or whatever he might say, right? And I'm betting you've already said something. I'm betting you have already brought it up to his attention, because that would be the natural first step, unless you're so intimidated in the relationship that you can't even express your needs. Well, that's a much larger problem. Okay. And if you're in a relationship where you can't, where you're terrified to even express your needs and your wants and your feelings, yeah, the relationship may very well be too far gone. But you have a responsibility to you to express your needs, your wants, your feelings. All right. So if you've already expressed them in this case, the mere fact that you're coming to me, you're stating this on a social media talk live platform, says you've probably already brought it to his attention and it's been a non-starter, right? He hasn't done anything, he hasn't changed. Well, what's the message he is sending? What is the underlying message that he is sending when you've expressed your needs and your feelings to him and he doesn't change? The underlying message being sent is, Rob, you want to answer that one?
You don't matter.
Bingo. That's a bingo.
Although, maybe they're not bimbos, but still.
Right. From the perspective, if I'm feeling they may be lovely people wearing a swimsuit with the.
It's still wrong.
Why? And it hurts. It's wrong because it hurts. There are some relationships where that's okay. There's a mutual agreement. Okay. You know, you can look at porn, I can look at porn or whatever. When my girlfriend goes on business trips, my girlfriend is an extremely attractive 60-year-old woman. And she's smart as a whip, and she's just this wonderful personality. When she goes on business trips, I know for fact, there are 30-year-old men hitting on her. I know for fact there are women hitting on her. I know it. And we even talk about it. And if it bothered me, she'd, you know, tell me anything I wanted to know. And for me, for us in our relationship, it makes her feel loved and appreciated and, or at least liked as a woman, and that she still feels attractive, you know? And so it doesn't bother me. I don't care where you get your appetite as long as you're coming home to Papa for dinner, you know, so to speak. Well, you asked. Anyway, actually, you didn't ask, did you? Anyway, the point is, if you're making your needs known to your lover and they are not changing, they are sending the underlying message, I don't fucking care. You don't matter. And that's the even more painful part, not just the disrespect of your body and of your worth, but then the other message of, I don't fucking care. I'm more important than you is what his actions are really saying. And so then you ask the question, is it too far gone? Is it too far gone? And listen, if you are in a relationship with someone who doesn't care about your needs, who is actively disrespecting you when you are making your needs and your feelings known, and you, the mere fact that you're in a relationship with someone where you're making your feelings known and they don't care, says, well, that's beyond counseling. There's no counseling that can help that. If the other person doesn't even care about your feelings, they're not going to sit in a fucking counseling session and listen to your feelings, let alone are they going to sit in a counseling session and listen to what you think is wrong with them. Yeah, that one's done. That's a bingo. Quoting Glorious Bastards. Honestly, and it's painful and it's everything. 26 years, Jesus, is anybody still going to want me? Am I too old? Will I ever be liked? And so on and so forth. And, you know, there are a couple of ways to attack that. Just like I said a minute ago with Pteranodon with regard to, you know, holding on or letting go. Should I stay or should I go? It's, you know, has your pain gotten bad enough? Have you been disrespected enough? Have you been ignored? And so on and so forth. And you can either do it that way or you can say, I need to do this for me, and then begin the work of flushing out all your feelings and moving on with your life. All righty, Aphrodite. Rob?
Got one on YouTube here from Lori Beth. I think you may find another question in this question, maybe.
Hopefully.
Here it is. How do you know if they are drinking because of PTSD or are they just an alcoholic?
Where did your brain go with that one, Rob? I'm curious.
I don't think it matters.
Because?
Well, if they're drinking too much and it's a problem, it really doesn't matter why.
Right. And that's exactly right. And I was wondering what you saw underneath that, and that's what you saw. And the point is, if they're drinking, clearly you wouldn't be bringing up drinking unless you felt they were drinking too much and it's problematic for you. Now, if I'm in a relationship, my partner is not obligated to cater to my every last fear or want or why I think you should change, Susie. You should change, Susie. You should change. You know, Susie doesn't have to change for every last thing of me, but if it's hurting me, if it's just my fears or whatever, but if it's actually hurting me, well, then these are conversations we have to have. In this particular case, the person is drinking, and I'm going to assume that the person's drinking is harming the relationship or potentially harming you. And what's interesting is you say, well, is it PTSD or is they just an alcoholic? It implies that one of those answers would cause you to feel more sympathetic towards them. Do you hear that? So even though their actions are hurting you, you are more likely to excuse them hurting you and hurting your relationship if it's a reason that I can be sympathetic towards. In other words, you are willing to excuse someone hurting you. Do you guys follow the train of logic there? That if you're asking me which one is worse, you know, and that implies that one of those for you, if I gave you a certain answer, you'd be like, oh, okay, well, then I need to have more sympathy for my husband. And I should endure it more. You're being mistreated. A relationship that you value is being undermined by the other person, and that's hurting you, and you want to excuse it. I'm going to assume you've drawn it to their attention. And if you've drawn it to their attention and they're not changing, don't let people hurt you. Don't let people destroy a relationship. A relationship should be life-giving, adding to life. There are going to be times when your relationship sucks. There's going to be times when you have to carry your partner. There are going to be times when your partner is going to carry you. But overall, as the old saying goes, a bad day of fishing is still better than a good day at work. Overall, is this relationship more gratifying even on its bad days than any other relationship you've had on even their good days, roughly speaking? All right, next question. Have you got one for me, Rob?
Well, actually, there was that follow-up just came in. He says he slips and drinks due to combat PTSD.
Understandable. Understandable. My question would be, in combat PTSD or being in a given industry such as first responder and so on and so forth, yes, on one hand, it's understandable because I have no fucking clue what it's like to go through combat and how those memories and so forth could impact you. But I do know this. Is he doing work to change that? Is he in counseling? Is he working on his PTSD? Have you made your needs and wants known? And so back to your question, how do you know if it's PTSD or general alcoholism? I still think that's not something you're going to be able to differentiate per se. I still think the question is he doing work to heal himself? Is he actively engaged in doing work to heal himself? Is he genuinely contrite and apologetic for any pain he is causing in your relationship? Is he deliberate about wanting to improve the relationship and own his share of what's going on in the relationship? If those things are present, that is someone who is continuing to invest. They are acknowledging their flaws, their faults, and they are attempting to make it better. That is someone you want to invest in. Someone who knows their flaws and is doing the work to improve. And if they're not doing that, they're just saying, fuck off, I'm drinking. Oh, it's my PTSD. And maybe it is their PTSD, but if you aren't doing something to change that, to heal, then you're just saying, fuck off, these are the terms of living with me. And if you're staying with somebody like that, then you're engaged in your own form of sort of spirit suicide. All right, next question. Sven, what do you do when your twin betrays you and tells your spouse before you do, you are divorcing him? Oh. So I have my twin is Rob, and I'm divorcing Susie Q, my wife, and Rob tells Susie Q
before you do.
Oh wow,
he's leaving Susie Q.
Ugh.
Heard it through the grapevine.
Oh wow,
not your much twin. Longer will you be mine.
Right, good, well played. Is that a 50s or a 60s?
60s.
Heard it through the grapevine.
The beginning and the end of the year, Marvin Gaye, and then Gladys Knight.
Ah. She covered it?
They both covered, I don't know who wrote it, but they both did the same song.
Fair enough. All right, heard it through the grapevine. Wow, your twin told your husband that you were divorcing him before you did. Jeez. And you asked the question, what do you do? Honestly, well, you've got the one fire to sort of work on, and that's the actual marriage itself and the divorce. Obviously, you're working on that on one front. But to have your own partner, or excuse me, your own twin. You know, we all hear about how twins are so, you know, locked in and close and tight and everything, and they all think alike and loyal to each other and best friend forever. And some of the best twins studies in the world have been actually done at the University of Minnesota, which is one of the two, what? Twin cities, oddly enough. It's true story. Best twin studies in the world. Some of the best have been done at the University of Minnesota, my home state. What do? You have to talk this out with your twin. This is the sort of thing that could drive a long, hard wedge between two people, even two twins. What I would strongly recommend you start with, though, is you get a long, big old pad of legal paper or whatever, and you write the longest hate letter you can possibly write. And I mean hate. Not, gee, I'm mad. I mean hate and betrayal and disappointment in everything. You write that letter, I hate you so much for what you did. How the fuck could you do that? Who the fuck are you really loyal to? Because that's what you're dealing with. Wait, you're my twin. You're my sibling. You're my lover. My life, my twin. You betrayed me. How? All those questions. Start by flushing it all out. Getting as much out of your system on the emotional side as possible. That way, if you choose to go and talk to your twin, which I strongly recommend, you have purged a lot of the emotion, and you can still express your anger and your rage or sadness, disappointment, but you're not going to be so swollen with emotions that it's going to be this massive fire hose of blasting at them, which will potentially cause them to shut down, which isn't, you're not wrong if you do. You have every right to feel all those things. I'm just saying a lot of times if we purge out all the feelings in advance, we're clearer and we get our point across even stronger going in. But you have to talk about it with your twin. I don't think there's any doubt. You have to talk it out with your twin and discuss all the feelings of disappointment and disloyalty and rage and just sadness. How could you possibly do that? Can you imagine that, Rob?
One of our listeners said, that's horrible.
Yeah. I've got a few over here saying, Jennifer here on Facebook says she knows what she was doing. Ugh. And then she says, tell her to fuck off. Well, it's your twin. Yeah, you can say that, but you know, if you want the relationship. And Caritas here on TikTok says, trust shattered. Yes, exactly.
Yeah. What if the twin pretended to be her and said, I'm leaving you?
Wow. And what if the twin is a fraternal twin, so they don't even look alike?
That wouldn't work.
It wouldn't work. It'd be very weird.
Let's not make light of this.
I know, no.
But it does remind me of the old joke about the guy who said, my wife...
Wait. Let's not make light of this, but let me tell you a joke. Listen to you, you hypocrite. Go ahead, Rob. Tell us the joke.
Well, this guy said, my ex-wife loved to dress up as herself and act like a raving bitch.
I like that one. That's good. You know, Jennifer asked a very interesting question here on TikTok. She says, but what is the relationship between you and your twin? And you know what? That's actually a really great point. What was the nature of the relationship between you and your twin prior to your twin doing this? I assumed the kumbaya namaste one, you know, you guys were cozy, you know, thick as thieves. But is it possible there's already been animus between the two of you? And this was a fuck you. This was, I'm going to get back at you.
There must have been. There must be a backstory here.
Unless, well, maybe. I mean, yes, there's a backstory. But it could also be that have you ever had a sibling and you're just really close to their spouse? I've had a couple of those in my family. Like my eldest brother's wife, I've known her since I was 12. She's like one of the nearest, dearest people to me. Another brother, he's since divorced her, but I was very close to his wife. And she betrayed me. She didn't show up to my wedding. And it hurt my feelings because we were I thought we were friends. You know, you can get really close to an in-law, really close. So it could be that that there wasn't malice, that the twin just felt a closeness, a friendship, not in any sick way, but a friendship with your spouse and such a deep level of friendship. And again, nothing in a sick or twisted way, but just a deep level of friendship and crossed over a line that they shouldn't have crossed. And just, it could have been just a severe lapse of judgment in the moment. There may not have necessarily been malice in it. Rob, did you have something on that?
Well, maybe she was in love with this guy.
Well, there's that. There's that, you know.
But why would the guy marry the sister who looks exactly like his ex-wife?
Right.
That's kind of a scary thought.
Yeah, it is. Well, and here, Pumpkin over here on TikTok says, and we're bouncing around here. This is a good conversation, you guys. Pumpkin says, I had my close sister tell my son he was adopted before we could. Pumpkin says, absolute disloyalty. Yeah, you think?
That's very clear cut.
But what's fascinating is what Pumpkin says. She says, I had my close sister tell my son. So now we're seeing two situations paralleling each other, aren't they? Because we're seeing a twin give up a story on their twin, and we're hearing from Pumpkin saying a close sister. So that implies that there's something about that closeness that maybe gives me a right or a desire that I speak for you, that there's something fascinating going on there. Do you get the point I'm making, Rob?
Absolutely.
That is really interesting. Wow. Okay, I'm going to take just one more question here before we call it a day. If you've got a good one there, Rob, you can fire it at me.
I do have an excellent last question.
All right.
It's from Andrea over on YouTube. Hi, Sven. Can you please share something that you need help with, something you have been struggling with recently, and thank you.
Yeah, I'll be honest with you. I'll be really honest with you guys. After I've put in a long day of work, I'll sometimes, if, you know, Long day of counseling. So I had a 10-hour day of counseling on Wednesday, and then I had an 8 before it and a 6 on Monday. I think I had a 6 on Thursday and an 8 on no, I didn't have an 8 on Friday. I had a 3 on Friday, which was really nice. And those aren't 1-hour sessions. Those are like a 6 and a 2 and a 2 or something like that. Anyway, there's some, and then after sessions, I usually take an hour in between sessions. I have to lay down, close my eyes. Sometimes I'll drop into a quick nap. Sometimes my beta or whatever just needs to reset. But at the end of the day, then if I need to fire off some emails that my assistant Kate has lined up for me, or I got to communicate with Rob about a show or whatever, or KC is lining up our next guest, whatever it is, I'll do that. And then I'll go downstairs and, or go home and I'll mix myself a bourbon. Yeah, well, you don't mix a bourbon, or mix myself a gin and tonic. And I don't do it every day, but the problem sometimes becomes where one becomes four. Now I'm 260 pounds, so four gin and tonics really isn't a lot, but it's very easy for me to slip into that. It's very easy. And so it's not so much that I struggle with it per se. What I struggle with it then is then I start eating. And I, oh my God, my eating when I'm drinking versus my eating when I'm not drinking, it's ridiculous. Rob, we've been to dinners together where, I drink and then it's just like, oh my God. Right.
Yeah, it happens.
Well, and the worst part is when you're eating at Rob's house, and Rob's a fucking brilliant cook. Wife doesn't cook. He's the master chef. This is a silly thing. In my home growing up, there are 8 of us around the table, and there would invariably sometimes be food left over. And if the food left over, like this, mashed potatoes or whatever, was in front of Dad, he'd cut off a little piece of the meat, or he'd have one spoonful of mashed potatoes. Well, you sit there talking long enough, those mashed potatoes are going to be gone. Dad's going to eat it. I'm the same way. Don't leave the food in front of me. So my point is, it's not the drinking per se, it's all the eating I do because I'm vain as fuck. And so something I wrestle with, I wrestle with not having too many drinks at night, to be very honest with you. The next morning, I can always wake up and rally. It's not really that. I just don't like getting fat, if I'm really honest with you. And also then if I'm working a 10 and 8 and a 6, and it's highly emotional, draining work, then my sleep sucks, honestly. And, but also I can't get any exercise. I can't get on my bike. I love going bike riding and so forth. And, so that's neat. And so me, what I do is I go into, well, what's driving this? What's driving this need or this reflex or whatever? And, in my own journaling and my own work. So the shit that I tell you guys, I do that in my own life. I have to, to keep my own sanity and so on and so forth. All right. You know what? I'm going to take one more. Rob, you fucking stuck it to me on that one.
It was not me.
No, it was a great question.
Yeah.
It was a great question. I want to do one more.
I got a serious one here if you want to end on a serious note.
Well, you give it to me because I got one in front of me and then I'll wham and I'll go with whichever one I feel like going with. Go ahead.
All right, let's try this one. This is from Clara. I was inappropriately touched by my uncle by marriage when I was a kid. 31 years old now. I finally told my aunt. She said, that's not how he is. It must have been an accident. What do I do now?
And what was the name, the handle on that one?
That was Clara.
Clara. My question to you, Clara, would be, and you don't have to act on this. My first question would be, and I'd encourage you to write down your answer, is simply, what do you want to do? Not what do you want to have, not what do you want to have happen, because those are things where you're a passive player. What do you actually want to do, if anything? And again, I'm not saying you have to do anything. I'm just asking what you want to do. Write that down. And then my question would be, why wouldn't you do that? Why not? And then my question would be, what's your fear if you did do that? And then my question would be, what's your biggest fear in this whole equation? And then I would say this, your fucking aunt said that to you? Are you fucking kidding me? So that tells you that your aunt is clearly protecting her husband. Your aunt is clearly protecting her own sense of security. And you're saying that is a threat to her own security and her entire reality. She has to, at least in her world, protect her reality. The myth that her marriage is good, her husband is good. And so she's going to shut you down. And she has just shown you what she thinks of you. And that's the painful part, or certainly part of the painful part, that you don't matter enough to her for her to look at the truth. And of course, she would have to sacrifice her entire reality in order to do that. And you don't matter enough to her for her to do that. Here we go. This is the last one. What if you feel as if you are competing with your mother-in-law? So it's a woman's picture here with it. So I'm going to assume this is a woman. And so you're competing with your mother-in-law, presumably for what? The love of your husband, right? And not just that, influence. I'm betting the competition isn't, you know, that you hope your husband thinks you're prettier than his mom. It's more like who gets his ear, who gets his attention, who influences him. And you are feeling like you are not getting the influence or that she is running your life. Like you basically have a third person in your marriage. I'm betting that's probably what it is. And so the thing, all you can really do is continue to make your needs known and stand up for your needs and your wants and your feelings and observe the actions of the other person and listen to their responses. Is your spouse honoring your needs and wants and feelings? And now here's the thing. See, this is a tricky one. When you get into the influence, the undue influence or outsized influence of a parent in a marriage, this can really gum up any fucking relationship, any marriage. Where your partner is basically saying, my mom, and it can be in this case, my fear of my mom, my mom's wrath, my mom's disappointment. You're dealing with someone whose feelings are still largely controlled by his mother. And what you can do is you can make your needs known. You can make your wants known. And you have to keep doing that. And recommend going to couples counseling. But your husband needs to do the work. He needs to, because it's obviously harming your relationship. Unless there is the other possibility, and I'm sure it's not this, but I'm going to say it anyway. Unless your desires are, unless he's saying to you, you know, honey, because this happens where people say, I don't want you having any contact with your family. I want it to be all about me. Are you doing that to your husband? Are you trying to outlaw him having a relationship with his family? Now, if you can honestly answer that no, and you encourage a relationship with his family, then it sounds like it's going the other way. And that mom is in your relationship. And it's not just that he's a mama's boy. It's because, you know, you can be a mama's boy and love your mom and all that. But when the mom is actually a driving influence in your marriage, that's a fucking problem. And if he's not willing to acknowledge that and seek counseling to help fix that, then you think it's bad now. This shit only gets worse because your frustration and your pain only increase and continue over time. Rob, any final thoughts today?
Nice having a chat with you today, my friend.
This was fun. It was actually fun to bounce around a couple of those questions between all the platforms and each other and so forth. Don't you agree?
I certainly do.
I agree. And somebody said to me, by the way, when we were having the conversation about the drinking and you know, my vanity and so forth, somebody said, how about elevating your sense of self-worth? And,
Oh, no,
it's true. It's true. No, it's true. Although it's funny, if you asked anybody who knew me back in high school, be like, Sven, needing to elevate his sense of self-worth? He's the most arrogant person there is. No, I just like how I look, and it plays into my, you know, I like attention, if I'm really fucking honest, and that's a part of it. And so I just do what I want to do to feel and look how I want to look. That's all. I'm not a monk up in the woods. I'm not spiritually perfect or anything like that. I'm just a person trying to function in the world. And I like looking good, and I like being trim. Why? I have good energy. But more than that, I just like looking in the mirror and saying, oh, I like how Sven looks today. So, I mean, apart from the face part, there's only so much you can do with what God deals you. Anywho, how are you guys? This has been super fantastico. I love you guys, every last one of you badasses. For those of you tuning in around the world, for those of you out on the boat, those of you out on the range with your horse, saddled up, doing the work, those of you in your car or your truck traveling across whatever country you might be in, I'm thinking about you. Those of you doing the dishes, I'm thinking about you. I'm sending you love, and I hope we've been able to help you today. And on behalf of Rob the Rocket and KC in the booth, I'm Sven Erlinson. Have a kick-ass day.
The Badass Counseling Show is strictly copyrighted. No copies may be made without the express written consent of the Badass Counseling Show, LLC. The Badass Counseling Show is produced by Karen Camparelli and Robert H. Friedman. Executive producer, Sven Erlinson. Original music by 2-time Emmy Award-winning composer Trevor Morris. Have a kick-ass day.